Engage fluo injectors.
Engaging fluo injectors.
Fluo reactors at 80%, sir.
Fluo containment field is destabilizing.
Emergency fluo containment protocols now. All hands brace for impact.
Brace for impact in 3, 2, 1.
Holy testicular spheres, we're back with another episode of World 1-1 Podcast.
Choose your fighter!
I am, as always, your host, Larry the Bearded Wonder. Joining me this week is my partner in crime, Josh the LeGrew.
Hey, everybody.
And this week we are joined by special guest of hand-drawn game guides, Philip Summers.
Hello, nice to be here.
Real quick, just a 30-second synopsis. Tell everybody just a quick backdrop what you've been doing here, and we'll get into the details in the back half.
Yeah, sure. So I make these things called hand-drawn game guides. It explains itself. It's a video game strategy guide, all drawn by my hand in like an actual real notebook. That's the one sentence pitch right there. So
beautiful. I love every bit of it. So let's get into the meat and taters, and let's go straight to.
Video games.
Josh, I'm going to start with you. What on God's green earth have you been playing this week?
Okay, so I finished up Mass Effect Legendary Edition. I'm sorry, the first game of Mass Effect Legendary Edition, because work has been nuts. And I got that done. Kind of been dipping my toes back into some PSVR titles. Ooh. I got Iron Man for PSVR, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
I also got Gollum, which I have not really tried that much.
I don't know that one.
And Vader Immortal for PSVR, which I really love. So
I don't know Gollum either.
So that is, I just started. It's by Highwire Games. And I played literally like 5 minutes of it, and my wife called me, and I had to go out of the room, and I never got much into it. So I can't really attest much to it. But I know that it didn't like set the world on fire, but I haven't really played it much to give a honest opinion of it one way or the other. So I have to kind of let it go from that. But it's called Gollum. So I got it cheap. I got it for like $3. So I figured I'm going to get it. So.
Okay. And Phil, what have you been playing this week? What's been spinning in your disc tray?
So I just finished Uncharted 4 two nights ago. And I just also finished Final Fantasy Adventure on the Game Boy a few nights ago as well.
Ooh.
So that's what I've been playing. I never played Uncharted. I didn't have a PS4, so I missed out on all that stuff. I now have a PS5, and I have not played a single PS5 game, but I played a couple of PS4 games.
Hey, that's good.
Honestly, I'd probably be in the same boat, too.
Yeah.
It makes me feel any better.
Yeah.
Maybe Return.
Yeah. The reason I got the PS5 was because I wanted to get Resident Evil 8 like the day it came out,
sure.
and then I just didn't. Uh-huh. But I will. I'll get it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like it's going a lot of anywhere.
Play. Yeah. Yeah. What happened? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh no, you.
I was gonna say what happened was is I wanted to play 7 first, right? So I was in the middle of 7 when 8 came out. And then, like, by the time I finished 7, like, that desire to have, like, 8 immediately, I guess it just went away. I mean, I still want it, but, like, where I was just like, I gotta get a day, it comes out, gotta get, and then, like, the day came out, went by, and I was like, eh, whatever.
Yeah,
then
you're like, okay, I'm
good. I'll wait for
all the time.
Bucks. Yeah.
Right. All the time.
It's actually already cheap. I looked it up today, it's down to, like, $46 or something on Amazon, so it's getting there.
It'll go like a $20 sale soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say I'm sure somebody's gonna have that on like an awesome doorbuster sale for Black Friday.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, I'm curious. You said you were playing Final Fantasy Adventure on the Game Boy. Was it your first time through, or were you revisiting an old friend?
A real old friend. I got my Game Boy for Christmas. I got Mario Land 2.
Look at this room, Larry. Come on.
Oh, I know. I wasn't going to make an assumption though.
And Adventure was like the first, like, I had some Christmas dollars and I spent it on, that was like the first Game Boy game I bought. So I played it then, and I probably played it like a few times back then, but like I have not touched it since. So it was kind of like playing a new game, you know, like you remember bits of it. But yeah, I actually still really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I thought I was gonna screw around with it for like 20 minutes and then probably never play it again. And then I was like, this is actually pretty cool. I'm into this. So I kept playing it.
That happened to me with Mass Effect, believe it or not. Like, I love Mass Effect, mm-hmm. but I restarted that game probably 3 times back in 07 or 08 when it came out. And when I started playing it again, I forgot how much I actually forgot about it. And it was like a whole new game. And then when I hit the end, I was kind of like reluctant to start it. But once I hit the end game part of it, I was like, now I know why I love this so much. It was kind of like, okay.
And my nephew's trying to sell me. I never played Mass Effect. I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
No, you're right.
My nephew keeps trying to get me to play Mass Effect. I've never played it before. And he did the same thing you did. Bought the collection, and he's all in again.
Yeah, you got
it. I've tried sinking into Mass Effect a few times, and I just can't. It doesn't click with me as much as I want it to.
I'll just give this bit of advice. The first mission in Mass Effect 1 is really bad. And I don't know why, but if you get through that mission and you just like, and it sucks because you got to put a couple hours in just to kind of get through it. It kind of starts to roll a little bit, and then you kind of get into it. For me, I started that in 07. I actually put it down. And I put it on my shelf, just stuck it back in the shelf. And I think it was like 3 or 4 years later when the second one had already come out. In fact, the third one is about to come out. I kept hearing all these podcasts about people just like, oh, they're just raving about Mass Effect. And I'm like, you know what? I got to try this again. So I put the first game in again. I restarted it, and it just clicked. And then I went, I remember I finished the first game. It was a couple days after I started it. And I went to the store and I got the second game. Then I was telling a friend how much I loved it. He's like, oh, the third one just came out. He goes, I'll send it to you. So he sent me his copy that he just played. And I still have that on my shelf today. And it's like one of my favorite trilogies of RPGs, really.
Wow.
Because it gets better. Like, the first game is really, really RPG. Mm-hmm. A lot less kind of action RPG. But with the Legendary Edition, they did kind of tweak it a little bit to be more like the second game, so kind of some of the stuff that kind of annoyed you about it before, they fixed. So it kind of makes sense to play Legendary Edition if you're going to do it, because they fixed some of the annoying parts of it, and so that made it just way better for me. And now I'm on the second game again for the second time now, and I'm just like, oh yeah, this is good. And cool. it just really clicks again. So
were you one of the ones that hated like the ending, or you were always fine with that?
No, honestly, I was like, okay. I'm a little older, so I was like, all right, that's what they want to do. Okay, I'm fine with it. I wasn't like in love with it, but I wasn't like hating on it.
Okay.
I was like, well, if that's what they want to do, okay, I get it.
Didn't ruin the whole experience for you.
Not at all, because you have to look at it from like the sum of its parts type thing. Like, mm-hmm. I think, like, each individual experience in the game was worth the end. Right, now, the end might not have been what I wanted, mm-hmm. but it wasn't something that I was going to crucify the whole game for. Okay. You know? So, that's just kind of how I felt about it. But I know a lot of people that were, I think they were more invested in the overarching story. I was much more invested in the individual stories along the way kind of thing that you kind of got to do. And I really liked that part of it. So
you're a journeyman. You like the journey.
I do.
Not
I do.
The destination.
Yeah, and I am kind of like a monogamous gamer too. So I play like one game.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like split my time.
Well,
because
you don't play anymore, right?
Right.
You pick 3 games. You don't finish a single one.
It's exactly what. So I've learned just kind of like I hammer on this game until it's done, and I'll move on. I might play now as I've gotten older. I might play like one RPG, and I might put it in there like a kind of an action game, like a shooter or something, just to kind of like a palate cleanser. Like if I come home from work
and balance those flavors a little.
I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling like 2-hour RPG session. You know, I might do a 20-minute, you know, shooter session or something. That's different. But as I've gotten older, I've done that. But Usually I don't. I just kind of like, well, if I'm not going to play, I'm just not going to play, you know? So I play less games, I think, because of that. But what I play, I really play.
Yeah, I think that's probably actually better.
It's just kind of how I am. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna throw my two cents in here, and for one night only, I am going to break our unspoken cardinal rule here.
Uh-oh.
Because
we have one of those, by the way.
Yeah, and you know exactly what it is too.
Probably.
But it's because it's honestly the only game that I've been playing in the last week.
Okay.
Yeah. So. It has never been spoken on air as a rule, but for the last 4 years or so, there is one game that we do not talk about on this show because things happen, and I have some opinions about the person responsible for said game. But the sequel that I have been, as much as I like the game, I'm just not a fan of the person anymore. But the sequel dropped about 6 days ago. I was very excited. I was looking forward to, you know, seeing what he did with the story, with the game and everything else. So I picked up my copy of Axiom 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
Axiom Verge? Is that
right? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So we, we're not even going to get into what happened, but we're just going to talk about the game. Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah, tell everybody what you told me, because I liked what you were telling me.
Oh yeah, no, that's the funny story I was going to tell you today too.
Okay,
you're going to love this.
Okay,
so been playing for the last several days. I'm enjoying it thoroughly, mostly. Here's the thing. The first game kind of instantly hooks you and gets you feeling like, want to go further, want to play, got to keep going.
Sure.
Axiom 2 doesn't do that. It feels kind of meandering in the beginning, and it takes a little bit for it to actually get its hooks in you to where it feels like you're compelling yourself forward. Like you want to keep going. It'll get there. It doesn't have that insta hook like the first one did. And there's a lot that's really good here. There's a lot to love. The world building is really good. It's phenomenal. He's done a great job expanding on what was started with the first game. It almost recontextualizes or reframes everything you knew about the first game, which I think is really neat. So it's not that it undoes the lore and the story of the first game, but it almost reframes it so much that you realize that so much of your assumptions of what you understood about the world from the first game were probably way off the mark. Which is fine, because it's not like it explicitly said, this is the thing, and then said, no, we changed our mind.
So it is like, story-wise, it is a direct sequel?
It's not. No. Like
a, oh, it's not.
So numerically, it's a sequel. Story-wise, it takes place before the first game.
Oh, okay.
So it's you know, like Borderlands. It's the pre-sequel.
Okay.
In the very literal sense of the word, which I don't think I ever thought I was going to, you know,
utter again.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't think I ever thought I would say literal sense of the word pre-sequel, but there it is. He's made it. Now, that said, gameplay-wise, where this shines is the platforming, the traversal, all of that is a ton of fun. It's very well done. There's a big change in focus, too. Because the focus and the highlight of this is not the combat, but it is the traversal and the mobility in terms of how you're getting around the world. That's what really shines here. Unfortunately, what happened in the process is where Axiom 1 had a lot of really good combat. Like, he had it nailed down pat. It was spot on.
Yeah.
This one does not. Combat is a slog.
It's not like it's all melee combat, right?
All melee. It's all very close range, and everything hits like a fucking truck. So you have no way of keeping your distance at all for anything when, you know, you're getting your ass kicked. And it frustrated the shit out of me. So sure. I'm like, I am this close to having a really good time, like a really good time, but this combat is just so unbalanced and frustrating. And then something magical happened last night. So I'm laying in bed and I'm piddling around with Axiom 2. And I'm like, you know, I'm not done with this, but I need to put it down for like 3 minutes. So I hit the pause button. I'm staring at the menu. I'm like, I wonder what's in the menu options, just out of curiosity, because I like poking at them once in a while. So I go scrolling through the menus, the menu options, and I see a tab that says accessibility. I'm like, I wonder what he did for this, because that's a thing that's kind of cropped up on this show once in a while, and I'm a big proponent. I'm like, you know, the better you do in terms of accessibility options, the more respect I have for you.
Sure.
Is we've had some guests on over the years that have done some really impressive accessibility stuff for their game. What I found in that options tab, though, took me by surprise. I found two meters that could be adjusted, and I adjusted them both all the way. 1 meter lets me crank up lets you adjust the amount of damage that you deal to everything. So I just ratcheted that all the way up, and the other meter adjusts how much damage everything does to you, and I turned it all the way down. So I'm basically running around one hit killing everything so that I have an excuse to, like, you know, do some combat-y stuff, and, you know, but nothing's really impeding my progress.
But that's
so
great.
I'm getting that feel of fun. And it literally fixed the game for me. It made it, like, perfect fun.
Yeah, because you were telling me that. You wanted to just play the story.
Yeah, I wanted to play the story. I wanted to get wrapped up in the traversal and the mobility. Because that's the other thing, too, where the first game, you know, a majority of, like, your upgrades and abilities and powers that you find are all guns. Because it had a fucking cornucopia of guns.
Right.
This one does not. This one has a ton of, like, abilities and upgrades to find, but almost all of them are about your traversal and how you get around the world. So it's kind of like, there's a few ways you can compare it, but for me, in terms of, like, the focus in gameplay, Axiom 1 was very much like Ori 2, where it was much heavier on combat. Axiom 2 for me is much more like Ori 1, where it's a lot more platformy, traversal mobility. And like I said, with making that adjustment, at least for me personally, I think it shines much better. And honestly, I'm a little irritated that not one review or article anywhere that I've seen mentions that that's an option that you have. Because if I'd have known that, like, an hour or two in, I'd have made that change and I'd have been having a great time even longer. So,
you know, I almost did that with Uncharted, because they have a bunch of accessibility options. And I just want gyro aiming in it, and there's no gyro aiming. And you can actually just turn on, like, auto target. And I had it on for a little bit, and I was just like, I'm just whooping. I'm just auto targeting. So I was very torn. But I did eventually just settle on the regular control. But I did kind of want to just, I don't know, it's Uncharted, you know? You just want to, like, get through it and see everything. It's the spectacle.
You want to play the movie.
Yeah, exactly, right. And I'm sitting here just, like, getting mad at this analog stick because I suck. But
Uncharted, to be fair, Uncharted is a hard game to aim, and it doesn't do gunplay very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because, like, the situations in that game, I don't want to change the subject, but the situations in that game, the little, like, sandbox, no, it's like, they're like little playgrounds, right? You know when it's coming. You get to this area, you're like, okay, here's the ambush. Here comes the fight. But they're just so cool. There's so many little, like, you know, there's so many little optional paths and things you can do. So they're, like, really well made. But when you're actually trying to do them, like, if they controlled, like, I don't know, if they controlled great or better, I don't know, the gun play anyway, it would just, it would be so much better. But, I mean, I still enjoyed it.
So I'll leave you with some last thoughts on Axiom 2, and then we'll wrap up this section, and we'll hit the break. But one of the things that I think comes through really well here that there were hints of in the first game is just the cultural flavor and inspiration. The first game, like I said, had hints of it very specifically, too, in the music in one section of the game. It is very full bore here, where you get, you see a lot of influence of, like, what is it, Mediterranean, maybe Mesopotamian, Indian culture, both in, like, architecture and in some of the world design, and very much so in the music. It comes through loud and clear, very pervasively, but it's really interesting. You know, it's really interestingly done. He's done something worthwhile with it. My only other real kind of gripe is that in the sections where you go into the breach, stylistically, it's almost perfect. Like, it's a very, when you go to the breach, everything is very, like, low res, almost like a dot matrix look to it. And in the backgrounds and in the environments, it looks really cool. The problem is the sprites all do the same thing too. So they look very muddy, and it's kind of disappointing. Like, the contrast would be great if he had kept the sprites the nice, clean, crisp way they are throughout every other portion of the game and contrasted that with that low-res, lo-fi background in visual aesthetic. But everything else beyond that is cool. And then I'm also hitting a point where I'm seeing the beginnings of the world of Sudra, which is where the first game took place. And it's kind of neat to see it because you're just getting, like, a tiny taste of it, but you're also seeing it before the pathogen was unleashed, which is, you know, a big thing that set off the events of the first game. So it's kind of cool to see it in, like, its unscrewed with form. So, you know, before people came along and ruined everything. But no, it's neat.
Cool.
Actually, the breach is one of those things that I was telling you, you know, where you think you understood something and then you find out you were totally off the mark, but the game didn't really tell you the wrong thing either.
Right.
So, because that first game gives you the impression that the breach is just kind of like this substance that keeps these worlds separated so they don't touch.
Right.
And instead, now you find out that it's not just that, that it's its own universe that you can slip into as well. So, and it has a very different feel and flavor from the rest, you know, from the other worlds in the game, which is neat. So, but that said, it's a solid recommendation if you like the genre. And again, depending on what you like about the genre may affect your level of enjoyment, but at least if you're listening to this, you now have a piece of information that most everybody else has left out in terms of, you know, reviews and commentary. So if you're not having fun with it for, you know, the same reasons I was, go to the accessibility options. You'll have a whole lot better time and you'll still get your money's worth out of it. So that's my one caveat, is that fact should be known. But other than that, I think we're at a good place to hit a pause so that we can check in with Hard Copy Hounds, and you know, we can all go freshen our drinks, and we'll be back with the third half of the show right after the break. Welcome to Hard Copy Hounds, powered by World 1-1 and sponsored by Premium Edition Games and their upcoming Series 3 release, Cathedral. Let's get into the Hard Copy Hounds report. We're starting off this week by taking a look at LimitedRunGames.com, where you can currently pre-order or pick up your copies of the following: the Double Dragon and Kunio-kun Retro Brawler Bundle for the Switch is available in open pre-order till September 12th. Dusk on the Switch is available in open pre-order that goes live on August 27th and runs till September 26th. Haven on the Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5 are available in open pre-order till September 19th. Quake for the Switch and PlayStation 4 are available in open pre-order that goes live on August 27th and runs through September 26th. River City Girls on the PlayStation 5 is currently in open pre-order and available through September 12th. Shantae Half Genie Hero is on PS5 and available in open pre-order till September 26th, as well as Shantae and the Pirate's Curse on the PlayStation 5, available in open pre-order till September 26th. Super Meat Boy Forever on the Switch and PlayStation 4 are available in open pre-order until August 29th, as is Super Meat Boy, which is a reissue from Limited Run Games, available on Switch and PlayStation 4 in open pre-order till August 29th. Coming from Limited Run Games distribution line, we've got available Shadows of Atom on Switch and PlayStation 4, The Falconeer Warrior Edition for Switch, PS4, and PS5, Victor Vran Overkill Edition for the Switch and PlayStation 4, Going Under on Switch and PS4 is available for pre-order through August 22nd, Death End Request on Switch is available in hand and ready to ship, as is Hyper Light Drifter on the Switch, Harvest Moon One World for the Switch is available in an open pre-order, Billion Road on the Switch is in hand and ready to ship, as is Holy Potatoes Compendium for the Switch. Regions of Ruin on the Switch is in hand and ready to ship, and so is Super Epic The Entertainment War for Switch and PlayStation 4. Arc of Alchemist on the Switch and Thea Awakening on the Switch are both in hand and ready to ship. Mercenary Kings on PlayStation 4 is in hand and ready to ship as well, as is Where the Water Tastes Like Wine for the Switch and the PlayStation 4. Dark Complete Edition on the Switch and PlayStation 4 is currently available for pre-order through September 5th, and Dragon Star Varnir on the Switch is available. And rounding out the list from the distribution line on LimitedRunGames.com is Monster Boy for the Switch and PlayStation 4, where sales go live on August 24th with a limited run of 4,900 copies made available. Moving down the list, we're going to take a look at SuperRareGames.com, where currently you can pick up and order your copy of The Last Day of June on the Switch, The Mipumi Collection on Switch, Unrailed, Ida, and Yes Your Grace all on Switch, Monster Prom XXL, Old School Musical, both for the Switch, Little Inferno on the Switch, Smoke and Sacrifice for the Switch, the last three of which all currently running low stock alerts, and going live on August 26th with 4,000 copies being made available is Roki. Sliding down the line, we're going to take a peek at SpecialReserveGames.com, where you can currently pre-order your copy of Demon Throttle for the Switch in open pre-order through October 13th. Broforce for Switch and PlayStation 4 are in open pre-order till August 31st. You can also pick up your copies of Piku Niku for the Switch and Heave Ho on the Switch. Also coming soon to Special Reserve Games, while we are waiting for details, it has been made known that they will be releasing Loop Hero and Weird West. Next, we're taking a look at our sponsor, PremiumEditionGames.com, where you can currently order your copy of Super Blood Hockey for the Switch and Pigeon Dev's Game Collection for the Switch, both with low stock alerts, and coming soon, their first Series 3 release for the Switch, Cathedral. Next on the line, we've got StrictlyLimitedGames.com, where you can currently put in your orders for copies of Rolling Gunner plus Overpower on Switch and PlayStation 4, currently available for pre-order, as well as Spelunker HD Deluxe for Switch and PS4, Speed Limit on Switch and PlayStation 4, Clockwork Aquario for Switch and PlayStation 4, all available for pre-order, as is Last Labyrinth on PlayStation 4. Bubble Bobble Four Friends, The Baron is Back for Switch and PlayStation 4 is available for pre-order. You can also order your copy of Darius Extra Version for the Genesis or the Mega Drive, depending on your side of the pond. Don't forget to also order your copy of A Magical High School Girl for the Switch, currently in pre-order with a low stock alert. Darius Cosmic Revelation, for the Switch and PlayStation 4, available for pre-order, as well as Turrican Anthology Volume 1 and Turrican Anthology Volume 2, both for Switch and PlayStation 4, available for pre-order. Mega Turrican Director's Cut for the Genesis or Mega Drive is available for pre-order, depending on your side of the pond. Super Turrican 1 and Super Turrican 2, both for the SNES and Super Famicom, are available for pre-order. Don't forget to get your copy of Space Invaders Invincible Collection for the Switch, Pressure Overdrive on Switch and PlayStation 4, No Heroes Here for the PlayStation 4, Coffee Talk for Switch and PS4, all available for pre-order, as is Darius Cosmic Collection for the PlayStation 4, Lode Runner Legacy on Switch and PS4, Necrosphere Deluxe on the PlayStation 4 with a low stock pre-order alert, and new The King's Bird for PlayStation 4. Next, we're taking a look at StrictlyLimitedGames.com's partner store, where you can order copies of Kinect Tank for Switch and PS4, Star Renegades for Switch and PS4, Witch Spring 3 Refine for the Switch, Wonder Boy Asha in Monster World for Switch and PlayStation 4, Cotton Reboot for Switch and PS4, Root Double for the Switch, as well as Yeast Origin for Switch and PlayStation 4, Crosscode on PS4 only, and Umihara Kawase Bazooka for Switch and PlayStation 4. Coming down the line, we've got IAM8bit.com in the spotlight, where you can currently order copies of Mutazone for Switch and PlayStation 4, Disco Elysium Final Cut Collector's Edition on the PlayStation 5. The Ori Collector's Edition on Switch is back available in open pre-order. Manifold Garden for Switch and PlayStation 5, Etherborn for the Switch and PS4, Spinch for the Switch, Grindstone on Switch, Res Infinite Eco Forward Edition for the PlayStation 4, The Pathless on PS5, the Annapurna Deluxe Edition for PlayStation 4, Untitled Goose Game is also available for Switch and PlayStation 4, and closing out the list, we've got Wadham, as well as Inside for PlayStation 4, Gone Home on the Switch, and a special title, Mega Man X for the Super Nintendo. Coming up next, we're taking a look at SignatureEditionGames.com, where you can currently put in orders for the following: Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX on the Switch, PS4, PS5, and Xbox One. Yonder for the Switch, PS4, and PS5 is currently in pre-order. Hellpoint for the Switch and PS4. Spirit of the North on Switch, PS4, and PS5. Cloudpunk for Switch, Xbox, and PC. Dead Cells is available on Switch and PlayStation 4, as well as Streets of Rage 4 available for Switch, PS4, Xbox, and PC. Children of Morta for the Switch, PS4, Xbox, and PC. Northgard on Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Bomber Crew is available for Switch and PS4, as is For the King. Bounty Battle is available on Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox. Valfaris and Vaporum, both available on Switch. You can also grab your copy of House Flipper for Switch, PS4, and Xbox, along with a copy of Sparklight for the same systems. Dungeon of the Endless is available on Switch and PlayStation 4. 30-in-1 Game Collection is available for the Switch, as is Instant Sports Summer Games. You can also grab your copy of Moonlighter on the PlayStation 4, Unbox Newbie's Adventure for the PS4, Stranded Sails for Switch, PS4, and Xbox One. Next couple of titles we're looking at are available only for the PlayStation 4, which include The Long Reach and Darkest Dungeon. Frostpunk is available for PS4 and Xbox One. Riot, Civil Unrest, Candle, Brawlout, Hero Defense are all available for the PlayStation 4. Runbow is available on Switch and PS4. And rounding out the list is Terraria, available for the PC. Almost to the end of the list this week, we're taking a look at EastAsiaSoft/PlayAsia.com, where you can bag your copies of the following: Seabed on Switch, Trigger Witch for Switch and PS5 is currently available for pre-order, Rainbow Skies on PS4 and PS Vita, Rainbow Moon for PS4 and PS Vita. You can also grab your copy of Alchemic Joust and Rive, both for the PlayStation 4. Semispheres on PS4 and PS Vita, as is Tachyon Project. Caveman Warriors and Vesta, as well as the Bleed Plus Bleed 2 collection, are all available for the PlayStation 4. You can also grab copies of Unepic, X-Morph, and Black Sea Odyssey, as well as Devious Dungeon and Leap of Fate, all for the PlayStation 4. Let's not forget Fall of Light Darkest Edition for the PlayStation 4. Before we hop over and get to the cringe title, as always, Panty Party Perfect Body on the Switch. Don't forget to get your copy of Murder by Numbers, as well as Morio Crystal H, If My Heart Had Wings, and Distraint Collection, all available for the Switch. And rounding out the hard copy Hounds Report this week is Fangamer.com, where you can grab copies of the following titles. Bugsnax for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 are currently available in open pre-order. Later Alligator and Stardew Valley, both available for the Switch. Physical copies of Hollow Knight are available for Switch and PlayStation 4. Undertale is also available with physical editions for Switch, PS4, and PC. Slime Rancher is available on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And Spelunky is available for pickup on the PS4 and PC. And last on the list this week is Hyperspace Outlaw, available on the Switch, currently in an open pre-order from Fangamer.com. And that's the Hard Copy Hounds Report for this week. And as always, remember, fuck the scalpers. Peace! And we're back with the third half of the show. This week, we're going to deep dive with our special guest, Philip Summers, from Hand-Drawn Game Guides. And so, Phil, let's jump in. And I know we got like the one sentence synopsis, but let's go a little deeper. Sure. Tell everybody a little bit more about Hand-Drawn Game Guides.
So they're very NES specific. So I'm covering old Nintendo Entertainment System games because they're a little more manageable. And sure. You know, when I started this thing, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just kind of playing around.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of growing. So right now I'm running a Kickstarter campaign to purchase hardcover versions of the books that I've done so far. So there is a Zelda book. There is a book that has both Ninja Gaiden and Contra in it. And then there is an unreleased book, which is based on Metroid. And right now they're all available to grab off Kickstarter, and it's doing pretty well. So we're pretty excited about that. And we're like,
and
super
all unlicensed, right? And unofficial.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that about you, by the way, that you say that like multiple times.
I mean, it has to, well, I'm covering my ass, right?
I hear you. No, yeah. I hear you. But I love it though, cause it's great.
Yeah. So yeah, they're all unlicensed, unofficial. Cause they have to be. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that we can get through the campaign without that being an issue. Right. I think if it was an issue, I'm pretty certain they would have gotten this by now, I think. So we're looking pretty good, which is nice. I tried to follow all the rules, and yeah, so that's the gist of it. So, there it is.
So I wanna ask, because I've seen Hand-Drawn Game Guides mentioned a couple of times before the Kickstarter, but I honestly didn't dig deep into it. But I saw the Kickstarter come up, and then I saw the Metroid guide, and you had me hooked. And I was there, you know, the moment that shit went live on Kickstarter. Yeah. Throw my dollars at it.
Metroid. Anything Sweet. Metroid. Larry will buy God, anything yes. Metroid.
Awesome.
I am a great big whore. So and that is just my drug. I want to know what your reaction was, or even if you were watching it as your Kickstarter went live, because I was watching it just going, God damn.
Yeah, well, of course I was watching. I had to hit the button. And then it's just all immediate, right? So right. as soon as you hit the launch button, you got to make sure it's working. And then as the pledges were coming in, it blew my mind. It was insane. And it, you know, made me feel good about I've been working toward this Kickstarter for years now.
Right.
So it was awesome to just kind of see that. It was like, okay, I had this idea. I'm seeing it through. It's working. It's resonating with people. It was awesome. And it still is awesome.
So for a little bit of context for our viewers and our listeners, that Kickstarter went live with a funding goal of 20 grand, was it?
Yep. Yeah, 20 grand.
And it blew through that in, what, 25 minutes?
No, it blew through the funding goal in 2 minutes, and then it blew stretch goals. Blew through the stretch goals in about 40 minutes, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, it was just stunning and heartwarming to watch. I'm like, fuck, that's cool.
Thank you. Yeah, and that 20 grand was literally, I mean, I say it in the video, that was like the bare minimum that was needed to be raised to just do a run of these books. And, you know, if that's what we hit, if 20 grand was all we hit for the whole campaign, then, you know, that would have, all that money would have just went to the campaign. I wouldn't have made anything from it, right? It was just all would have been the books. So, it was really cool to just kind of see it go up. And I mean, it just gives us so many more options to make these books even better. That's another thing with the Kickstarter and all the stretch goals was just like, we want to really maximize what you're going to get out of this. So for me, like the stretch goals, I kind of want them to like really benefit like everybody. So yeah, even if you just ordered one book at $25 and you were just expecting a hardcover, maybe you weren't even paying attention to the stretch goals, but maybe you haven't even looked at it again and just done looking at the campaign, you know, you want that book. But when it shows up, when it arrives, I think you're going to get like a much better product than what you thought you were going to get, because it's going to have all sorts of cool special features and you're going to print it on like great paper. Covers are going to look awesome. And, you know, there might be some other little doodads and surprises. So.
Sure. I gotta ask you. Oh, I'm gonna jump in here, Larry. I gotta ask you, what made you want to do this? Like, what made you want to even start this whole thing?
Because I was sick of sitting at my computer doing work. So I'm a full time graphic designer. So I'm at the computer all day.
Sure.
And then when I do like illustration work, I have a Cintiq at home. So I'll just be on the computer again, and like at some point I was just like, I'm sick of looking at the screen. And then, you know, I had this idea. I was like, well, maybe I'll just like, it'd be kind of cool if I made like an art book like on a video game, like, I don't know, it'd be kind of like Nintendo Power, and that's something like I wouldn't necessarily need to look at the screen all the time, and I could take a break and just kind of concentrate on, that's another thing, I haven't made anything that's like tangible because everything's on the computer. And I'm just like, sure. I don't have any drawings that are like my drawings. So that was like another reason. I just kind of started fooling around with Contra. I picked Contra because it's super short. I love that game. I think I know it pretty well.
Yeah.
And you know, I just have like a passion for Contra. I just love it. So I just figured that'd be like a cool, it would just be a cool little thing to work on. And when I put it out, I just released it and I was like, here's this thing. Here's this PDF of Contra. I didn't even have a name for it. It was just like Contra hand-drawn strategy guide and art book or something like that. There was no like official title or anything. That was kind of, it just started with that.
That's awesome. Cause I mean, Contra is a favorite of mine too. Cause a friend of mine, I just went to visit not that long ago in Nashville, and we played through that game again. Of course, we use a Konami code, but
okay.
We did play through that game again for the first time in a long time. And I've been friends with him for, like, I'd say at least 35 years now.
Wow.
And so, like, we knew each other forever, and that game, so that, to me, that hit, when I saw the Contra, I'm like, I gotta get this.
Cool.
Even for that game. I'm like, okay, this is cool.
Cool.
So how long ago did this start from like moment of conception to now? What's that time frame?
About 3 years. So I think, yeah, Contra was about, yeah. And Zelda took me a long time because,
sure.
I mean, I struggled with it a bit. I got lost sometimes as far as how I was going to handle it. And there would be stretches where maybe I didn't work on Zelda for like 2 months, right? I would just walk away from it and just come back to it.
So Zelda was about a year and a half, but like actual work time, no, not a year and a half worth of work. But with Metroid, I've had some more time on my hands, and I've been able to, I mean, I was able to get through Metroid relatively quick, but I mean, I spent a ton of time on it. It just, I never had those moments that I had with Zelda where I walked away from Metroid for like weeks and didn't touch it. So I just kind of kept moving on it. And Metroid was about, Metroid was about a 6 month process.
Okay. I know you mentioned you hit some roadblocks doing Zelda. What was, for you, what was the, like, the biggest roadblock? What was the biggest thing that just stumped you and made you go, I gotta put this down for a minute?
Everything between the dungeons, because that was what I started with. Because when I thought about Zelda, I thought, well, that game is just, it's just nine dungeons and a world map. So in my head, I'm just like, I just need to draw nine dungeons and I just need to draw a world map. And then as I did that, I was just thinking like, oh, well, I have to get them from one dungeon to the next. Like, how am I going to do that? And that was when I got like really serious about it. And, I spent a lot of time thinking, how am I going to do this? And that was when I came up with the kind of storybook layout. And, even once I figured out that idea, it was still really hard to just figure out exactly how I wanted to do something, when it was going to happen, how I wanted to guide them around the map. But I think it came together. Obviously, I think it came together pretty well because people are into it. But that was definitely like a hurdle for Zelda.
Okay. Out of curiosity, you know, is there a next game in mind that you want to tackle, or do you want to just do these three and be like, you know what, I did my thing and this was cool and I want to go do another project? And if that's the case, what's that other project that, you know, maybe you're eyeballing?
So it's funny. That was my goal. My goal was to just make four books. I was just like, that's the project. The project is four books.
Right.
But I didn't expect this. So I think that's changed the course a little bit. I would love to make a video game. Like, I would love to make one.
Yeah.
Would love to just sit down and learn, I don't know, some engine and figure out how to do all that. I have a background in animation, so like it would be cool to just animate all these little characters and enemies and all that stuff. I would have a blast doing that. That was kind of the thing, was I was just going to do these four books. I always looked at it as four books. And then move on. But yeah, obviously things have changed a lot, and you know, I'm willing to keep it going and make it cooler and better since people are into it. And I feel like I'm at a point right now where I can't, first off, I'd be stupid to just be like, okay, we're done. But
yeah, from a business standpoint, yeah, I get you.
Yeah,
but a creative business standpoint too, because like I think people are really invested in what you're doing now. Yeah. So you know, it's the fire is there. Why would you just like put it out?
Right, you know? And the thing is, like, the other thing is, I like to challenge myself with each of them. So maybe it will get to a point where I'll just be like, I can't do another one of these things. But as long as I can find like an interesting angle for each book, then I'll just keep having fun with it. You know, so like, I feel like they each kind of have their own little hook or theme to them. Like Contra's super basic. It's like a 24 page book, pure. Just maps, bad guys. But then like with Ninja Gaiden, I thought, well, how can I make this different? And that was when I came up with this idea to write like these little journal entries that go along with the cutscenes. And then so I was like, well, I could write the whole thing from Ryu's perspective, and it's as if like he has a journal in his pocket and he's just writing stuff down during his adventure. And
that's kind of slick, actually. I like that a lot.
Thanks. The reasons I came up with it is because when I was playing the game again for the book, you know, I'm like really paying attention to the story now. And it's like, I used to think the story was so awesome. And then I'm playing it now. And I'm just like, this is just absurd, right? I mean, I still love it. But so I was just like, maybe I can like try and make sense of this stuff. Maybe I can have some fun with. So the way the journal entries work is like, I didn't want I didn't want to just regurgitate the cutscene and then add a little more. I wanted to just add to the cutscene. So you can't just read all the entries and like, I got the whole story. Like, you literally need to look at the video game. You need to watch the cutscenes. Then you can get to these, then you can read these things for extra context. So that was kind of my thing for that. And then Zelda has like the storybook layout where it's kind of like you're reading like a storybook for like a kid or something. And then Metroid is going to be, it's basically a comic book. So that was my, that was the way I did Metroid different. But as far as future ones, I'm really leaning towards Simon's Quest.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd love to do Mega Man 2.
Oh my God.
I was just
how much money do you
say...
want now? Because I'll give you a bunch.
We actually, I put the call out for, you know, any listener questions. And the one that we got was from Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham, asking, you know, any Mega Man guides in your future.
Oh, Mega Man 2 is my jam. That the story of that game for me is insane. I made my mom drive through a rainstorm to get that game. And I lied to her that the store had them because she asked me to call the store. And so I had to call the store. And I said, hey, do you have any Mega Man 2s? And they're like, yeah, we have one copy left.
Oh.
And then my mom was like, ask them to hold it. And I said, could you hold it? They're like, no. And I said, they said yes. And she drove me there. We got it.
Oh, sweet. Do you still have that? I do.
Awesome. I have the box as well, too. Like, that's I have awesome. That game with the box. It's one of my few games that I had a bunch of boxes, bunch of games, everything. But when I moved one time, I lost a bunch of stuff, which... as an adult sucks, but as a kid I would never buy it again because first of all I can't afford it, and secondly that's not what it was about. It was about the experience of it, right?
Yeah.
But I still have that one, and so that was like kind of special to me. So yeah, I would definitely get on board with the Mega Man 2 guy.
That's cool. Yeah, and like the idea I have for like Mega Man 2 is I think it would be so cool if it might be a little dry, so I'd have to like I don't know. Well, I would come up with a way to make it a little more interesting. But, like, I would love it if it looked like you're just looking through, like, blueprints of, like, all the, you know, like, a doctor. Maybe it's, like, Dr. Light and Dr. Wily is just notes. And you see schematics of all the bad guys and the robots. Like, I think that would be so fun to do something like that where it kind of has a more, like, technical look to it.
Take your own spin on it. And just... Yeah. I love that you like use like the game as like that's the vision of these schematics. Like you would be looking at them and being like, oh, okay, this is what this is, and this is what this is, and that's what that is. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's what keeps them interesting. That's what keeps me wanting to make more of them.
Engaged,
like, oh, I got this new idea. I got this. I have that.
Because deep down, you're creative, so you want to create too. You just don't want to rehash something.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Like even though I want to do Simon's Quest, I have an idea for Castlevania 3. Like, it'd be amazing if it was just choose your own adventure book. You know, like when you come across one of your partners or whatever, and figure out how would I make like a flowchart of that and map it to a book to where. I don't know.
Talk about nostalgia. Choose your own adventures. I have like 200 of those books.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
In fact, a business that my friend and I are doing, we actually based it off Choose Your Own Adventure. So.
Oh, cool.
So it's like a total business model based on that, which is very different.
You got to be careful with Choose Your Own Adventure because the Choose Your Own Adventure owns that name.
Yes. Yep, they do.
So you gotta be careful.
Such a weird thing to think about.
Yeah, they'll get you. They'll get you.
Yeah, they trademark that game. They're like Nintendo.
Yeah.
They'll send you a cease and desist pretty fast.
Yeah, yep. I think it would just be cool if, you know, after that first stage, it's like, you know, there's a clock tower in the distance or something else. Trevor decides to pick that, and it's like, you know, flip to page 10 if you go to the clock tower. Flip to, you know, I just think it'd be cool.
Yeah, it's a good idea, actually. Because there is that choice in the game. So right. Why not make that choice in the guide?
Yeah.
So I see it on your shelf back there. At least I'm pretty sure that's what I see. And it makes me happy inside just seeing it, for one. And then two, now my brain is going, I would pay money for one of those hand-drawn guides of that. But that copy of Star Tropics back there makes me giddy inside.
So that copy of Star Tropics, I used to work at KB Toys, like, the late 90s.
Sure. Yeah.
And, I mean, at that point when I started NES games, we didn't even have NES games there. We had a couple of Super Nintendo games, but they were phasing out because we were already, like, deep in the PS1 and N64 at that point. But I'm cleaning out the back room. I'm going through everything. And underneath all like these shelves was this pristine copy of Star Tropics. And I was like, holy shit, right? So yeah. I immediately run up to the register and I ring it up, and it's not coming up. So then I just go to my boss. I was just like, this is not in the system anymore. Can I just take this home? And she was just like, yeah, go ahead. And there it is.
That's right, the best story ever of retail. Because I think Larry and I have both worked retail, so we know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're cleaning out something and you're trying to... I have literally like rang stuff up and it comes up like $1.98. And you're like, yes!
Yeah, it's like you got treasure. It's so good.
Yeah.
I almost kind of wish I didn't open it up because I could have got that game dirt cheap at that point in time, but it still has the shrink wrap on it. I just gave it a little slice. But, you know, it's got the paper that you can dip. I didn't dip it. So
now imagine if, because today with all the, you know, I'm gonna grade this and then throw it up there.
Yeah, right.
Kidding.
That's another insane thing. We would never have thought back in the day.
I thought about grading my Pokemon Red because I'm not really I'm not into the grading thing.
Right.
And I'm not really a big Pokemon fan, but I have like a pretty decent copy of Pokemon Red, and I just thought about like grading it just for the hell of it, but I probably never will.
I'm not into the grading thing either, but if I had like a sealed copy of something,
mm-hmm.
I would probably do it just to get the money for it. Like literally just if I was going to sell it.
Right.
And I'm not even for it, like Larry and I, we're not like for scalpers or anything, but
yeah,
if somebody's willing to auction this off and pay $100,000 or something. I'll definitely. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, let's be real.
Yeah.
If most people had a graded game and they're sitting on it and they knew it was $100,000, they're gonna sell it.
Yeah.
Because it's $100,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that'd help a lot of people out.
Yeah. No
so,
kidding.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between that and, you know, scalping in its current state too, where something new gets announced and then someone goes and snaps up every copy and jacks up the aftermarket price before the damn thing's even out.
Yeah, no, so that stuff's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I do have a couple of sealed games only because like I bought them digitally and then when I got the game,
right,
I was like, well, I don't want to open it, I already got
I
it.
I do that so, same
like,
thing.
Yeah, so I have like a sealed copy of Bloodstained, Curse of the Moon. Yeah. A couple other ones over
I got
there,
some Wii U but... games because of that same thing. Like, I found them just on clearance, so I picked them up.
Yeah.
But I have them digitally, so I'm like, I'm not going to open that yet.
Right.
And then it's been a few years, so I'm thinking to myself, why would I even open it?
Right. And I bet you the reason, maybe I'm wrong, I'm just assuming, but the reason that you probably picked them up is like that fear that one day your digital copy will go away, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
So it wasn't even so much that you bought it just to have, I want the sealed copy. It was just...
No, it
like,
was just, oh, it's here, and it's like $10, and my digital copy might just be gone one day, so I'm just going to get it.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, I am kind of like that, like Larry, too. Like, we like the physical copies. If we can get them, we'll do it. Like, we'll double, triple, quadruple dip on stuff just to get it, you know? People laugh, but then they realize, yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it in my head. And I know, you know, the only ones that you're doing or you have done, at least, I won't speak to any future ventures yet, but, you know, are all NES games, you know, all the 8-bit era. Would you want to stick specifically to 8-bit or would you want to venture further down the line to say 16-bit, where there's more explicit detail in the game design itself because it was, you know, later in life and the technology had come along, or stay kind of with the era that you're doing now because, at least in my head, it reads to me, because it is so visually vague to a degree, mm-hmm. that you get more creative freedom to interpret this in your imagination how you want.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a piece of it as well. I think you can still do that with 16-bit stuff for sure. And especially even if you went like 32-bit era. But like today's stuff, no way. It's just so, everything's just filled in for you, right? You don't have to really imagine anything because it looks amazing. And
yeah, well, unless it was like a side story or something, you know?
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
like a side character that you might not see a lot in the main game. I could right. I could see where you wouldn't might do that, but I get you.
Yeah, but no, I'd like to stick with the 8-bit stuff because it's just the right size to where I feel like I can handle it and you know, do some creative stuff with it.
So, still in the 8-bit wheelhouse, what about Game Boy Classic?
Yeah, maybe. Like, I would like Donkey Kong 94 would be awesome. I love that sure. game. Final Fantasy. I was thinking when I was playing Final Fantasy Adventure, I had like a million ideas. Like that would be a good one, you know. So, I mean, I don't want to rule anything out, but
yeah, right.
So, actually, on the subject of ruling something out, is there any one in particular that you're just like, yeah, no, never, refuse? Like, just the idea repulses you.
Like Final Fantasy 6 and or 3. Oh, not it yeah. doesn't repulse me. It doesn't repulse me. It's like one of my favorite games ever, but the idea of covering something like that, there's no way.
And there, it's like a perfect game, really. Like Final Fantasy 6 especially is like perfect game. Like
yeah.
How, you know, they already have, like, if you wanted a strategy guide, you could get it, but what you're doing is different. It's in a different little space. So
yeah.
I can see kind of where you wouldn't want to maybe tackle that.
Like, I want to do Castlevania 2 because, well, I love Castlevania. And it's still available. People can still play it. It's on the Castlevania collection. But, like, it, you know, people kind of make fun of that one because it is, like, obtuse and hard. But I think that's why it's perfect for this kind of thing.
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people didn't understand it. It was a lot like Zelda 2.
Yep.
Like, it was this different type of game in the same genre, but it wasn't the same game. And so I think when it went to localization, I think a lot of things were lost. I also think a lot of people don't just realize there's a lot of story there. There's a lot of places for you to like really shine with like something like what you're doing, where people could see that game and like it would have like a renaissance almost. Like, oh wow, this is like, if I take this guide and play this game again, I'm just gonna see this in a whole nother light. And
that's what I hope happens with Metroid. I mean, that was why I picked Metroid.
Right.
Because that's another one where like everybody loves Metroid, but that first one I was like, oh, the first one's kinda dumb now. Or you know, but it's like, no, it's actually awesome.
It's so, not dumb.
Here's how to play it.
Shows its age a lot.
Sure.
Well, the technology of the time didn't make it like a Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Like, there's that much story there, though. Like, you have to, like, flesh out the story in your own mind, which a lot, or read a comic or read something about it.
Right.
Which and a lot of people just didn't do.
Right. And that's one of the things with Metroid as well is like, no, Larry, you're a big Metroid fan, so I don't know if you're going to be a fan of this, but there's so much. It's like 35 years of lore for Metroid, and then there's, like you said, there's like lore in these comic books, and it's there's so much, right? So the way I approached this book and the story was as if there's no other Metroid stuff. It's just this Metroid. It's just what we know from like the manual. Yeah. And
that's good though.
Building out its own little world. So like
you shoehorned it in there, like right, like with the source material, you shoehorned it in, which is pretty awesome, actually.
See, so for me, it feels like it. Yeah, no, and for me, it feels like you've essentially treated it as if it's in a time capsule, so that it's untouched by anything that came after. Yeah. I like that idea of going back to this is all there was, and you know, there wasn't a ton of lore to restrict your imagination on what that world is and is not. So, and I like that. That plays very much to like the child in me, and I'm just that makes me happy inside in a variety of ways. Cool. So,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, which on the back of that, honestly, a thought that popped into my head, and I may regret sharing this because if it ever happens, I will end up double dipping. But I would totally throw money at a version of these that's spiral note.
You guys, your video completely cut out for me. I don't know if it was me or you guys.
It blinked on me too, actually. Yeah, me too. LaGrange hasn't come back yet.
Oh, okay. It just came back for me.
Okay, so your video is probably coming back to me in a minute here. So
I'll turn it off and on again. Hold on.
Do a little clipping. I don't know either. That's weird.
That's never happened.
There it is. Yeah.
There you're back. And we just missed it. You had your thought, so I missed it.
He was having this big epic moment.
I'll back this up.
That's normal for Larry.
This will be a rare instance where I actually do a little clipping and editing because I don't do much of it. But so I'm really digging this idea in my head that there's a version of these that you print on like a spiral bound notebook, lined paper and everything. So you can see the lines under it. And it's just, you know, like the playground edition, you know, it's that thing that that we did as kids in school,
yeah.
You know, because it was on lined paper in a spiral notebook. Cause that's what we had to pass the time in class.
Yeah.
So, but no, like a playground edition or, you know, a schoolyard edition in a spiral bound notebook where I can see the lines under the drawing.
Yeah.
I'm like, I really kind of want one of those now.
I did have a thought. Maybe I'll do it one day. I did have it. Well, no, I probably won't because of the way the Kickstarter is working, but I thought it would be awesome if I did, like, cause I wanted to do the second quest in Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was important just to have the first quest be the book. But I think it would be awesome if I just made like kind of like what you're saying, where it's literally just like a kind of a flimsy paperback. It's cheap.
Like we used to be able to get those. What were they, like the supplements? You'd like put them into like the game. Remember that? Like, if you had something and it was like a comic book, but you had like an addition to it, you would like stick it at the end.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Something like that. And yeah. It's just like kind of cheap paper, and like the maps are sort of there, and the idea would be like you do your own map. So it's like,
oh, that's cool.
Maybe it's not as maybe the maps are there. They're not as detailed, right? Maybe you just get like a sort of, maybe I just draw the wireframe of the map for each dungeon, and then it's kind of up to the player to just
kind of like how the manual in. Didn't the manual have like didn't they have like little like grid paper or something like that in there?
Or is a that, lot of I'm, them used to have a couple of sheets, a couple of pages at the end. They were just
they always had notes.
Blank.
Yeah, where you could make notes and whatever. Yeah, so that's kind of cool. That's like that idea.
Yeah, but I didn't do it.
Modern day, bad idea.
The physical print Nicholas games on Switch, the manuals in there have kind of had that homage throwback too, where they've got a couple blank line pages in the back of the manuals that just says notes.
Yeah.
That's kind of great.
Yeah. That they in particular know no one is going to use on those games because they're not gonna mark up those manuals.
Yeah,
nope.
Not a single one of mine.
Nope.
So, well, I think we're hitting about that time, and I don't want to keep you too terribly late because we're already getting there. But is there anything that you want to toss out for the end of this year?
No, just you can check us out at let's go on Kickstarter. Type in hand-drawn game guides, and we'll be up there for I don't know how long this will take to come out, but I don't know.
End of the week.
All right, so you got like over 10 days to jump on board.
Link will be in the show notes.
Sweet. And yeah, I mean, that's it. That's really all it is. And if you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Hey Phil Summers, and that's all I got.
Okay. Right on. Well, thank you very much for taking the time out and joining us this evening. You know, congratulations on a phenomenal run on Kickstarter, which, you know, isn't even done yet, but just the out of the gate was absolutely amazing to watch. That was just cool as shit.
Thanks.
There's no polite way to put that. That was awesome. Like, LaGru will tell you, I was sitting there in our group chat. I'm like, dude, check this shit out.
It's so awesome to see that so many people just love, like, what you're doing in the physical nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just the idea that that's not dead, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people always say, oh, this is dead. This kind of stuff is dead, and it's not.
Yeah.
Just, there's a lot. It's just so cool to see so many people really like it. So.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, again, thank you for taking the time. We had a great time. And like I said, you know, we would love to have you back. You know, you decide to start another project, give us a shout and we'll have you on and, you know, let you tell the world all about it.
Cool. Thank you. So, appreciate it.
So, with all that said, though, we're going to wrap up this evening. Thank you to everybody that tuned in this week. Thank you to my partner in crime, Josh Jolly Round, the LaGru, and Philip Hand-Drawn Summers. So
I'll take that.
And we'll check you guys next time here at World 1-1 Podcast. Everybody say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight.
Peace.